Tomorrow night on ESPN, our look back at baseball's greatest games continues with Game 6 of the 2001 World Series. David Freese, one of the most unlikely World Series heroes ever, carrying the Cardinals past the Rangers. That's tomorrow night, 7 Eastern, on ESPN and the ESPN app. Meanwhile, this morning, we're allowing everybody to pick their number one MJ moment. Dominique Foxworth, what's yours?
Oh, man, by far, it was at the end of that when Reggie was telling the story about them first playing against each other, and Jordan had a rough first half, and Reggie had a good first half. Jordan went off in the second half, and he decided to tell Reggie Miller, "I'm Black Jesus." That moment stood out to me, to have that confidence that early in his career. And well before he was the six-time champion, that was a hilarious comeback. Jordan is one of the greatest trash talkers and obviously the greatest player.
That's outstanding. It was. That was in episode 9 of Last Dance last night, where they covered that series, a legendary series between the Bulls and the Pacers. We're here all morning long with you as a special 3-hour edition of Get Up Today. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol and delighted you've chosen to get up with us as we spend this morning looking back on the final two episodes of The Last Dance, which aired last night, culminating in Michael Jordan's famous game winner against Utah that won the 1998 NBA championship. And as we recap the 10-part documentary as a whole, we take a look back at Jordan's unforgettable journey to 6 NBA titles.
We're entitled to defend what we have until we lose it.
There's drama that summer as to whether they're even going to come back.
Get the team handbook laminated on the front page. Last Dance.
It was the last year we were going to be together. Management had already made that decision.
I wouldn't want to be like Mike. It's an impossible task.
Now, this is not one of those lifestyles that you envy, you know?
People were afraid of him. We were his teammates and we were afraid of him.
That's what I want to do to you.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was an asshole. He was a jerk. But as time goes on, you're like, yeah, he was a hell of a teammate.
We kind of needed that, the bad guy, the tough guy.
I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. It is who I am. That's how I played the game. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Like everybody else, I loved this documentary for two different reasons. One is for all the people who aren't old enough to have seen Michael Jordan. I think it was a history lesson. And then for those of us who were there for this, I covered it. Tim Legel, you played against him. Jay Williams, you were a high school kid looking up to him. It's sort of a glimpse back into our past. And there's something about that that is remarkable to look back on your own life. Timmy Legel, you and I were talking before we went on the air this morning. That was about as comprehensive a look back at a period of time that meant so much to so many people as you could ever possibly have put together. And if I had to pick my number one thing that came from it for me, Tim Legler, it would have been that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It was so nice to be transformed back to that time again. You don't get that many moments as a player to be taken back to the time in which you played when you're 20 years removed from it. So I think going into it, that's what I was anticipating, looking forward to the most, and it absolutely blew that out of the water because I just remember what the league was like at that time. And I thought the early episodes when they were showing Michael Jordan first getting into the league and the challenges of trying to make that breakthrough against teams like Boston and the Detroit Pistons and what he went through physically and what he put his body through and the fact that he was going out there 82 games a year doing that, playing that style, that aggressive attacking style in an era when you could lay guys out consistently. It was amazing to watch and be taken back to that. And I think it puts puts into perfect summation why he's considered the greatest of all time. To have that level of success, not only statistically what he did, but to win and to break through against that level defense in an era that was designed to stop it. I think for me, the competitive will, is what made Michael Jordan the greatest. And I think his ability to survive those first 7-8 years of his career without a catastrophic injury, really amazing to me.
Jay, well, you were a kid growing up watching his career and an aspiring basketball player and ultimately the second pick in the draft. And you go to Chicago and they give you Michael Jordan's locker. So your history with him is an interesting one. How did watching these 10 episodes of The Last Dance change the way you view or think about him?
Well, it moved me. Obviously, I think you can view other people through the lens of empathy and also, you know, what your experiences are. I think your experiences in your life can help you shape a perspective on what somebody else goes through. And Look, the basketball stuff is obviously, it's incredible, right? It's top of the line. It's something in rarefied air we've never seen before. But seeing Michael Jordan, the person, was the most interesting thing. Like, I've been around Mike a lot. Like, Tim Grover was my trainer when I was in Chicago, when I was trying to come back. I spent time talking to Tim about Mike and hearing stories about Mike and actually seeing how he dealt with the death of his father to a degree. And, you know, even how it affected him on the court and how he worked through that, seeing how he dealt with Gus, a guy who was like a father figure, and hearing that relationship and the people that he had connective tissue related to, and how he, what his family was like and his upbringing. Like, that was the most intriguing part, because everybody gets a chance to hear about Michael Jordan, the incredible competitor and the guy who's won multiple championships. But I think this allowed us to actually have depth into who Michael Jordan was as a person and how he dealt with all these things. And the court was his safe haven. It was his sanctuary. It was the most privileged place in his life, because he got a chance to be Michael and take out whatever anger, happiness, whatever he was feeling in his life on those four corners of the floor, Tim. Like, that was the most amazing, moving thing for me to witness through Michael, how he was able to be such an artist, painting his picture every time he stepped his foot across that line, because he got lost in battle. He became one with the game.
Now, I want to talk about one game in particular, because there was one very significant thing that came from last night's episodes, and it's about one of the most famous games Jordan ever played, which has been forever known as the flu game, game five of the 97 final, when he had flu-like symptoms, scored 38 points, and led the Bulls to a win. The highlights on SportsCenter that night were voiced by the great Stuart Scott.
But in the fourth, Jazz up three, Jordan, Trey, Money. He came in shooting only 17% from three land in the playoffs. Game tied at 77. After the whistle, Jordan on the bench looking absolutely ill. And I'm not talking ill as in good. Minutes later, though, Jordan tells Russell, hey, yo, it's Michael, not Michelle. Michael trying to hit the second free throw, does not. But Jordan, sick and everything, fights for the rebound. Out to Pippen. Pip to Mike. Michael, can't you see? Sometimes your threes just hypnotize me. Despite being sick and not being able to walk, Mike had 38 points. No on the three, Stockton with the ball. Scotty, very intelligent foul. Stockton shooting 85% from the free throw line in the playoffs. Misses it, misses the first, effectively ending the game. Michael could barely put his arms up in the air. Unbelievable game by Michael Jordan.
So it's been forever known as the flu game, but last night we find out for the first time that it was food poisoning. And it sounds like it was intentional, with five guys who delivered him a pizza the night before in Salt Lake City. Timmy Legler, I will admit, I've been around, I covered, I never heard that before. That blew my mind last night.
I completely agree. I think that was news to all of us. You know, you remember that so vividly, and how hyped that was, and what a performance it was, feeling the way that he was and looking the way that he did. And we always thought it was the flu. It turns out that's going to actually be referred to as the bad pizza game. I mean, there's no other way to put that. And the fact that, you know, to hear Tim Grover tell that story last night was sensational. He's saying, hey, you know, Mike gets hungry. We're in Salt Lake City. There's not a lot of choices that time of night, because it is a town that shuts down pretty early. So now they're scrambling to try to find him some food, and they find one pizza place that's open, and you get five guys knocking on the door to bring him that pizza. And I thought Michael was also interesting when he said no one else had a taste of it. I ate the whole thing myself. And then obviously we find out now that is what was bothering him to that extent. It absolutely, you know, puts a new light on that game, and it changes the perception that all of us had the entire time, was that he actually had a flu bug. It was a pretty funny story, but it's also very revealing, and I'm glad now we finally have the truth.
Yeah, there have been quite a few revelations that have come out of this, and for me, that's certainly among the most interesting. How about you, Jay Will?
Yeah, Greeny, I said to my wife last night, who eats well all the time, I'm like, see, Black Jesus eats pizza. This is okay. This is acceptable. But I think also, you know, playing through that game, because as a player, we always heard rumors back in the day, even training in Chicago, like, you know, was Michael Jordan out the night before? Was he smoking cigars? What was his routine? And now actually to get clarity on that, I think is a game changer. But also, like, that moment for me as a little kid, that got me drinking Gatorade, Greeny. Like, remember seeing Michael Jordan looking gassed, looking out of breath, always looking tired, but him chugging on that Gatorade just constantly, and how it was able to propel him. Like, the launching of brands around that moment too, that are associated with that moment because of MJ fighting through that. just ultimately, I mean, it's been ingrained in my forehead since, you know, I've been a little kid. That's in my head since I've been a little kid. That's just what you remember. It's just incredible to actually have clarity in that moment, finally, years later.
All right, everyone this morning is picking their personal MJ moments. And Tim Legler, yours, I know, is especially personal.
Yeah, it is. And people ask me all the time, because I did have an opportunity to play against him my entire career with the 90s. So I had a lot of opportunities to play against Michael Jordan. But, you know, this moment, you know, this is All-Star Weekend 1996 in San Antonio. And, you know, I had fought CBA, Europe, got cut a couple times, and I finally had made my mark in the league, and I was having a great year, and I go down to San Antonio, and I win the competition. And the very first game after that performance was in Chicago. I met up with the team on the road, and this picture was taken in that game, and I'm standing at half court, and when people see that picture, they say, oh, what, was MJ talking trash to you? And I said, no, actually, I remember this vividly. Someone was shooting a free throw. We're standing at half court, and he first was congratulating me on winning the three-point title, and then he also asked me about my daughter who had been born that week. My first child was born that week and actually was induced so that I could perform in the three-point shootout, because it meant that much to me to go down there and try to prove I was the best shooter in the world. And he was actually making a comment about, you know, I bet you can't wait to get home to that baby girl. So that was the conversation that we were having standing at half court. And that's why there's a little bit of a smirk on both of our faces, because people just assumed he must have been, you know, trying to tell me what he was going to do to me on the other end of the floor when he caught the ball. And that really wasn't the case at all. So that was like another human aspect that I had to interact with Michael Jordan. And it's a pretty cool memory for me and a pretty cool picture.
That's a great moment. It's a great memory. Absolutely. Guys, both, thank you very much for doing this morning, and we'll do much more as we go. We're talking about Michael Jordan a lot today here on ESPN. Winning six titles, not easy. Some feelings along the way were certain to get bruised. Just how tough was Michael Jordan on his teammates? One of them will answer when he joins me live coming up shortly. And we'll get to some football as well. Aaron Rodgers said he wanted to start and finish his career in one place. How likely does that seem now? With the answer to that question coming up next, you're watching Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up, and all morning long, everyone here is picking their MJ moment. Marcus Spears, what's yours?
It's the Be Like Mike commercial, G. I remember the theme song, obviously, but just seeing that commercial and thinking about everything that we just watched, I could imagine how many of us was out there trying to emulate and be MJ, and we all tried it on the basketball court growing up, no doubt about it. So that's my memory for MJ, amongst many others, but that's my favorite.
That's a good one, and it became iconic. A lot of things became iconic because Michael Jordan did them. They seem iconic now, but Nike basketball and Gatorade and a lot of other things weren't quite so iconic until Michael Jordan was doing them. We have much more Michael Jordan and Last Dance coming up. Will Perdue will join us at the bottom of this hour, so in about 15 minutes, talking about his former teammate. Jalen Rose and Stephen A. off the top at 9 Eastern, so 45 minutes from now. And then Mark Jackson in our next hour as well. Don't miss it. Lots of coverage of the Last Dance as we continue this morning on ESPN. And maybe one day we'll get a 30 for 30 on Aaron Rodgers' time in Green Bay, which may be coming to an end sooner than we expected. The Packers quarterback spoke with the media Friday for the first time since the team traded up to draft his potential replacement in Jordan Love.
The general reaction at first was surprise, and like many people, you know, obviously I'm not going to say that I was, you know, thrilled by the pick necessarily, but I understand the organization is thinking not only about the present, but about the future. And I respect that. I think what it does is just reinforce kind of the adage that you can only control what you can control. And so my, you know, sincere desire to start and finish with the same organization, just as it has with many other players over the years, you know, may not be a reality at this point. And as much as I understand the organization's future outlook and wanting to make sure they're thinking about the team now and down the line, and I respect that, you know, at the same time, I still believe in myself and have a strong desire to play into my 40s, and I'm just not sure how that all works together at this point.
All right, so all of that was from a conference call with reporters on Friday. Dan Graziano, you were one of those reporters. What were your takeaways from all the things Aaron just said?
Found it interesting, Greeny, that he drew a dichotomy between, you know, being not thrilled, as he said, about the pick because of its effect on his ability to manage the remainder of his career. He stayed away from criticizing the team, as many people have done, for failing to improve in the short term, right? For not drafting a receiver in a big receiver draft. Talked up his current receivers, young guys that he thinks are going to continue to develop this year. But when he talked about himself and his future, he said he still wants to play into his 40s and still would like to finish as a Packer, but acknowledged that because of this pick, it may not be in his control anymore. He used that word a couple times. He said it takes away some of the controllables. So I found it interesting that he would be sort of reassessing his own ability to manage the remainder of his career the way he wants to, as opposed to just being angry that they didn't make a 13-3 team better.
Yeah, I think it was a very honest and very professional way of reacting to it for the first time publicly. But Marcus, do you think this thing is bound to get ugly? One way or another, somewhere along the line, it takes a turn into the place that maybe we expected it to go Friday.
Gee, Aaron Rodgers knows he's out of Green Bay, and yes, it will get ugly at some point, especially in what I think him trying to force his way out of Green Bay probably before they want to start that succession plan in Jordan Love. Look, Aaron Rodgers is an uber competitor. That's the number one thing people know. And also, Aaron Rodgers is one of the elite quarterbacks to ever play the position. So if you think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be in an organization that is clearly already planning for the future with this Jordan Love pick, that he's going to sit idle and just say, okay, I'm going to play these rest of the years out of my country. He may be forced to, and that's another reason for it to get ugly, G. But I think this, like I said before, Aaron Rodgers is going to try to get out of Green Bay before we all think Aaron Rodgers is going to be out of Green Bay. That's how I feel, and I'm sticking to it, because that calm, calculated demeanor that he had just now, that's fine for this year because he knows he's going to be starting and playing, and that's the only option that they have. But wait until next offseason when we back on Get Up, G, and I'm talking to you about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, and all of this juicy news about him getting out of Green Bay starts to come to fruition.
I hear you, and I agree. The money is going to be really complicated because he has huge money due in this coming season and the season after that. But, Neek, I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but I've heard a million times people say that once a player starts talking about retirement, he might as well be retired. Does it then hold that if the team is already planning for its future beyond Aaron Rodgers, that on some level it has already begun and Rodgers knows it?
Yeah, I don't see how it doesn't. I think it's not only the problem that Rodgers knows, it's that everyone knows it. They sent the clear message to everyone that this is Matt LaFleur's team and we're moving in a direction that fits best with Matt LaFleur, not necessarily Aaron Rodgers going forward with all the decisions they made in the draft. And I do think that Aaron Rodgers handled it amazingly professionally, better than most people would and better than I would, absolutely, if I'd ever accomplished nearly what he did on the field. And I do think that there are a lot of nonsense football adages out there, but that one, you can only control what you control. Like, that rings quite true, at least to me right now, as my internet's going out, I'm switching, we got camera malfunctions, just pulling it all together. All I can control is these takes, Green. That's all I can control is these takes that I'm giving you.
But you're doing it extraordinarily well. Dan Graziano, let me come back to you. Because Marcus and I think both agree, Aaron would probably like to get out of there as soon as possible. But I don't have the figures exactly in my head. But it's huge money this year and huge money the following year. So how does that look if he really does want to get out of there?
Well, I think, you know, they could do it next offseason and take a massive dead money salary cap hit if they wanted to. But more likely, 2022 is the first time they can get out of that contract via cutting him or trading him. And that's probably the date that looms in his mind in terms of when he has to be thinking about maybe being somewhere else. Of course, that depends on what Jordan Love does developmentally in the meantime. Depends on what the Packers do, too. Remember, the Packers are not in a rebuild mode. They're coming off a 13-3 season where they went to the NFC Championship game. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, and he indicated this a couple times on that call, it's pretty easy to focus on the short term and trying to reach the Super Bowl with a team that came that close to doing it just this past season.
Marcus, is there an impact on the other players on that team? They're all aware of this conversation. They've all have their own conversations about it. They all know what's going on. Does it impact the rest of the players?
Hell yes, especially if your quarterback is on here talking about the team planning for the future. Look, here's the deal too. Aaron Rodgers makes a lot of guys better. He's creating opportunities for a lot of other guys to have success in this league as well by him being on the team when you talk about his play on the field. So you better believe a lot of guys are paying attention. Gee, this is the thing that we forget because we get enamored with these quarterback conversations. Quarterbacks determine a lot about how other players are perceived and how their future careers go. So while Green Bay is planning for the future, they better hope they have it right with Jordan Love when they plan on moving on from Aaron Rodgers, because they may have players there now that want to move on because Aaron Rodgers is moving on perceivably. And there's another whole layer to the fact that Aaron Rodgers may want to get out of Green Bay before it's time. I can't wait to talk about it when he finally tell us, hell, I'm getting out of here.
And again, Hembo just popped it up there, which is great work. $31.6 million in dead money would be the cap hit next year, not this coming season, but the one after. So the likelihood is that Rodgers is in Green Bay for two more seasons, even if he doesn't want to be. Guys, outstanding, and more football as we continue. But right now, time for a motorsports update, which is brought to you by Mother's Polish. And NASCAR returned to action yesterday for the first time without fans in the Real Heroes 400 at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. Kevin Harvick pulled away over the final 30 laps to earn the win, his 50th career victory in NASCAR's top series. Here's Harvick after the race on the unique experience.
I want to thank everybody from NASCAR and all the teams for letting us do what we do. This is a, you know, I didn't think it was going to be that much different, and then we won the race, and it's dead silent out here, so we miss the fans.
They're remarkable times, but they're back out there, and we've got it all covered for you here. Coming up next on ESPN, after we wrap up, it's time for First Take, then it's SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump. At 4, it's 20 minutes each of Jalen Jacoby, highly questionable, and around the horn. 2-hour SportsCenter starts at 5. The PTI guys are there at 5:30, and cap the day with SportsCenter with SVP, a full day of sports every day here on ESPN. Coming up, what was it like playing with the greatest of all time? Very few can answer that question, but one man who can will join me live next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We are back with much more here this morning as we look back on the last episodes last night and the last 10 episodes of The Last Dance, which are all available right now for you on the ESPN app. One of the interesting topics that came up repeatedly was Michael Jordan as a teammate.
People were afraid of him. We were his teammates and we were afraid of him. And there was just fear.
That's what I want to do to you. I just threw it to you.
Ignore this guy. He's dumb, stupid. He's overplayed.
The fear factor of MJ was so, so thick.
Yeah, let's not get it wrong. He was an a-hole. He was a jerk. He crossed the line numerous times. But as time goes on and you think back about what he was actually trying to accomplish, you're like, yeah, he was a hell of a teammate.
He was pushing us all to be better because he wanted to win. And guess what? It worked.
we kind of needed that. You know what I'm saying? I needed him to be the bad guy.
Fascinating. And here's one of those teammates, and you saw him all over The Last Dance. It's Will Perdue, who played on the Bulls from 1989 through 1995, part of the first three championships there, the first three-peat. Will, it's great to see you again. And as I was listening to that, as I was listening to you talk and Judd Bushler talk and some of the other guys who played with Michael, it sounds the way I hear a lot of guys talk about coaches that they had once before, coaches who were so tough on them and so hard on them, but they look back on it now and they realize that it was for their own good. But you don't usually hear that about a teammate, which makes this sort of fascinating. So when you look back on it now from that standpoint, how does it make you feel?
Not really much different. You know, the interesting thing, you're seeing a lot of stuff now on Twitter about how that type of atmosphere just wouldn't work now. And maybe it wouldn't, because people are different. Personalities are different. Egos are different. But the one thing I can always say is people are like, oh, he was a tyrant. I never looked at it that way. I thought he was a guy that was trying to motivate his teammates. You had to adapt to his style. But let's also be very clear here. Phil Jackson allowed that type of atmosphere, which for us was productive. And also what you have to talk about, Greeny, is the excellent job that Jerry Krause did of bringing in the proper players 99% of the time that could handle that type of atmosphere, but also be able to produce under that type of pressure and scrutiny.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that. I hadn't planned to go there, but let's do it since you mentioned him. Jerry Krause put in place literally every brick of those six championship teams, including drafting you, every single brick, with the exception of one. And that one is Michael Jordan. And I think that forever changes the way people view him. And there's been so much conversation about the way Jerry Krause has been portrayed over the last 5 weeks. And he's no longer with us to defend himself if he would choose to. What can you tell us about Jerry Krause?
Well, unfortunately for Jerry, he wasn't a people person. He thought the media was the devil. He hated the media. He thought no good could come from talking to the media because he always thought that they were trying to break things up. As you heard him say, there's no backstabbing here. Phil Jackson, on the other hand, was a media savant. He knew how to use the media to his advantage. And that was an unfortunate circumstance for Jerry. I can tell you, Greeny, that he wanted to win almost as bad as Michael. When I say almost as bad, at all costs. Even if it meant him taking the brunt of any mistake that was made, it was personally brought on him. But he truly cared about the team, the organization, the players. And like you said, I wish he was here to defend himself, because yeah, he made mistakes and he understands that. But I think truly he doesn't care, because he went out and accomplished what he wanted to do. He took a guy that was already there in Michael Jordan and then made it a guards league and then put players around him to win those championships. Remember, when he was trying to do that, everybody thought you had to have a dominant post player to win a championship. Jerry Krause was the one that changed that, because he realized what Michael Jordan could do for him and the organization.
I'm so glad you said all of that. And I will just say one more time, it is a travesty that Jerry Krause didn't get into the Hall of Fame while he was still alive, for himself to enjoy it and for his family to enjoy it with him. Okay, moving beyond that part of it. You were just telling me a few minutes ago you have a 16-year-old son. Someday, when you have great-grandchildren and you're sitting on a porch someplace and they say to you, what was it like playing with Michael Jordan? What are you going to tell them?
I tell them it was some of the best days of my life. It was the interesting thing. When I got drafted in 1988, it wasn't, oh, congratulations, you got drafted by the Chicago Bulls. It was, congratulations, you're going to play with the best player in the world. I think some people at times forgot who I was going to play with. But I think about what he taught me as a person, and most notably as a competitor. He defined the word intensity. But at the same time, as, and I'll go back again, his win it at all cost attitude. I know a lot of people talk about that, and a lot of people say, hey, I'd love to have that job. I'll do anything to get that job. Or I want to win this game, whether it's tennis, golf, basketball, baseball, at all costs. But he truly did it, in the sense that the sacrifices he made, even to this point, Greeny, some people after watching this documentary, they're still not Michael Jordan fans. And I don't understand how that is the case. You know, I guess, just as they say, a first impression is a lasting impression.
Did anything about watching these and maybe hearing bits and pieces of his thoughts on it that you had not heard before, that certainly most people had not heard before. Did it change any of the way you view him now?
No. The only thing that I think that this thing did, and I hope people understand this, and I'm very grateful that Michael allowed this to happen, was that people hopefully understand how difficult it was to be Michael Jordan, the basketball player, and Michael Jordan, the person. The basketball player, because he was always on. I just don't understand how he did that night after night. And then how intense he was at practice the next day or in between games. But I think the best thing was, is they showed the one piece, I think it was in episode 7 or 8, where it shows him in a hotel just sitting on a couch, looking at the camera going, this is not the type of lifestyle you envy. You envy Michael Jordan, the player. You envy Michael Jordan, the star, the guy, how much money he makes, the shoe company. But what you shouldn't envy is the lifestyle that he had to lead as far as always being behind closed doors and what it took for Michael Jordan, the person, just to go outside.
Maybe the most talked about moment from the whole series, at least up until last night, was that moment at the end of episode 7 where he choked up talking about the way he was perceived by some of his teammates, perhaps like yourself. And he said, you know, if you didn't want to, this is the way I played the game. If you didn't want to play this way, then don't play this way. And he had to stop the interview there. What were your feelings when you saw that?
That's the Michael Jordan that we very rarely saw. And I'll stand by my comment. You know, it was after we won that first championship in 91 when we got to the locker room, we turned around and he's got the death grip on the Larry O'Brien trophy. His dad is next to him. You know, he's weeping. We didn't see that type of emotion from him very often. That was the type of emotion, as you see there. It was more about anger and frustration because of what wasn't happening, because he hadn't won a championship yet. That championship in 91 was 3 years in the making. And to see that what he did that year in 91, to see how he cried uncontrollably in 96, but also to see him in that moment where he, you know, he got choked up because how important it still is to him about what he accomplished as a player and as a person shows that he actually is human, but he very rarely shows that internal human side to where he allows himself to be vulnerable.
Will Perdue, it's great to see you again. It's been too long. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed this over the last few weeks. I'll see you down the road. Stay safe.
Got it, Greeny. Thank you. And I don't know what I'm going to do next Sunday.
You can watch the Lance Armstrong films. They start this coming Sunday. We'll talk more about that as we go. If you like cycling, you're going to be fascinated. All right, coming up, now that The Last Dance is over, have your opinions on Michael Jordan changed? We just ask Will. Two of our insiders tell us that answer is not so easy. And you'll hear why next. Let's get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up with some news from the NFL, where teams can begin reopening their facilities this week, although coaches and non-rehabbing players will still not be permitted, according to a memo obtained by ESPN over the weekend. Teams that are not ready or permitted to open by then can do so as soon as they meet the necessary criteria. So quickly again, Dan Graziano, we saw German soccer, the Bundesliga, come back over the weekend. How can that inform what might and might not work for the NFL this year?
Yeah, I was told last week to keep a close eye on that because even more than Major League Baseball or the NBA, that probably most closely resembles what the NFL will be dealing with if they want to have games in their own stadiums this fall. So if you looked at what happened, and I watched some of it, you know, there were everybody who wasn't in the game was wearing a mask. The bench players were seated in the stands, in the empty stands with 3 or 4 seats apart from each other. The goal celebrations were kind of, you know, not a lot of high-fiving and touching of each other. So I think that the league is looking at that league and other soccer leagues as they start to open as an example for how they might be able to get up and running in September, assuming access to testing, improvements in treatment, all those things that we talk about that are conditions of this and any other league starting up again.
Yes, and money and all things generally always becomes a factor. And there's been something of a snag in the baseball piece of this thing when their attempt to return. It's been a lot of conversation around how the revenue is going to get split. How does the NFL plan on dealing with lost revenue, if there should be any?
Well, there's going to be a discussion and probably to some extent an argument between the NFL and the NFL Players Association. Remember, it was only like 2 or 3 months ago we were talking about the collective bargaining negotiations between these two sides. At some point over the next couple months, they're going to have to get together again and talk about what happens if there is significant revenue loss in the 2020 season, as is expected at this point due to the pandemic. One person on the ownership side told me last week there's going to have to be a discussion about how to share the pain, and that's not going to be an easy conversation. The salary cap could drop in 2021 as a result of lost revenue. It could affect a lot of things in terms of how players are paid and how free agency goes next year. So look for that conversation to be taking place here over the next couple of months and maybe into the season.
I get it, and that's fair, and I understand they've got to figure out what to do with their money. It is, after all, a business. But I'll say it again, as I said with the baseball, if you're going to fight over money during a pandemic, do it quietly. Do it behind closed doors. The fans are not going to want to hear it. Dan, thank you. And our look back at the greatest Monday Night Football games continues tonight with the Chiefs and Broncos week 4 of 2018. That's Patrick Mahomes' left-handed pass. It's tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, back to The Last Dance, and it's brought to you by State Farm, in which we had a behind-the-scenes look never seen before at Michael Jordan and what it took to be the greatest of all time. And, of course, one of the most memorable moments came in Episode 7, where Jordan talked about why he was so demanding of those he played with.
I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
So Michael Jordan, we have not seen many times before. Zach Lowe and Jackie Mack are with us early this morning. Guys, thank you both for getting up. And I know, Jackie, that moment stood out particularly to you. Why?
Well, because I think we forget sometimes that Michael Jordan is a human being. We think of him as an icon and this supernatural athlete that can leap tall buildings in a single bound. And in fact, the reason he was tugging those players along, Greeny, the reason he was being so tough on them was because he believed it was best, not just for him, but for all of them. And that he was trying to get them somewhere that they couldn't get on their own. And I think the frustration and the emotion was, don't they get that? Don't they understand? I'm doing this for them. I'm not doing this to antagonize them. I'm doing that to get us all across the finish line. So very poignant moment for me. I've seen some slithers of that of Michael Jordan off the court in, you know, private conversations, but I'm glad that the rest of the world gets to see it.
Yeah, Zach, I agree. And as one, I was privileged enough to be around him a little bit in my life. Another thing that it made me feel was that was just him demonstrating maybe involuntarily just how much it all mattered to him. Like it just meant so much to him, right, that at times it brought him to tears thinking about just how important to him it actually was.
Yeah, I think that was one of the great joys of this is, you know, Michael is, as Jackie said, an icon. I mean, I was a teenager during most of Michael's prime. He was probably on my television screen more than anyone on earth. And yet I felt like in this documentary, this is going to sound silly, but I saw him make facial expressions and have a little bit of a mischievous personality that I don't think I had really ever seen before because I wasn't around him privately like you guys were back in the day. And that was a great, great joy for me. The other thing, you know, the other part of his personality that I think really stood out was how he took care of the security guards and all the people that took care of him. And I think it's interesting. I think that and how hard it was. You heard Will Perdue talk about how hard it was to be Michael, to be isolated in your hotel room. And then you pair that with the taking care of the people around him. I wonder how much that kind of informed the way he runs the Hornets, right? He's taken a lot of criticism for hiring friends and, you know, family members. But if you're Michael Jordan, I wonder if you live like that, I wonder if you just have such a hard time trusting anyone.
Jackie, one of the things that I thought was very interesting before the series debuted was Michael said he was concerned about how people might view him, how they might see him when so much of this was put out there in the public. How do you think people's opinions of Michael Jordan one way or another might be changed or shaped by watching this? And how was yours?
Well, my opinion wasn't changed at all because, again, when you go through it and you live it and, again, have the context where you have a conversation with someone like Michael and you know what kind of person he is and you knew how much Gus Lett, the security guard, meant to him. But it's funny. I have a lot of friends who are not sports fans, as I'm sure you guys do. And many of them have said to me, wow, I thought Michael Jordan was nicer than that. And those people, frankly, are missing the point. It's very lonely at the top. And by the way, Michael Jordan is not unique in the way that he tried to pull his teammates along. Magic Johnson did it. Larry Bird called his teammates sissies. Kobe Bryant was absolutely ruthless. And who did he learn that from, by the way? Michael Jordan. So I just think you can't take little snippets of this. You have to look at it in its totality and appreciate what this meant. This is what people should remember. How hard it was to keep this group together through two dynasties. There was so much drama, so many distractions. All it does is make me admire him more, frankly.
And Zach, again, maybe you're the better person to answer that question, because as you say, you weren't around all of that when it was actually happening. How did watching these 10 hours influence the way you view Michael Jordan?
It didn't at all. I mean, this is exactly the Michael that, you know, I think anyone who is in basketball knew already existed. If anything, it was the sort of glimpses of his private personality off the floor, his trash talking, you know, in the locker room with Scott Burrell. That all that stuff was delightful for me. But in terms of what Michael was as a player and a person, I think it matched the image that we all had of him. Ultra competitive, ruthless, would do anything to win. In fact, I think it amped that up even more.
All right, Jackie. So he said in last night, at the very end last night, he said that he still can't accept the fact that they didn't get a chance to go for number 7. In your mind, if they had done what he is suggesting he thinks they could have, which is bring everybody back on one-year deals, do you think he would have won a 7th?
I do. Give me Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and anyone else, plus Phil Jackson. I'm never betting against that team, especially during the teams that you saw all around them. Now, the problem with that, Greeny, is this, that Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause at that point were untenable. Phil had to move on. So if Phil moves on, who's going to control Dennis Rodman? I mean, Phil was barely controlling him near the end. The dude went to Vegas in the middle of the NBA Finals. And Scottie Pippen, rightfully so, at some point, wanted to be compensated for being one of the top 5 players in the league at that time. And that wasn't going to happen in Chicago. So yes, if they were all stuck together, could they have won? Absolutely. But could they have stuck together? In my mind, that was going to be impossible.
Now, Zach, we all know that the team that wound up winning the Eastern Conference that following season in a 50-game season, the strike-shortened season, was an 8th-seeded New York Knicks team playing without Patrick Ewing by the time they got to the final. It certainly feels like if Michael had somehow held that group together, he might have certainly gotten back to the finals to begin with.
Well, but remember, Michael was hurt in that offseason. He hurt his finger in a cigar cutting incident. Now, it's unclear when that happened or if that happened after we all knew it was over, but he was going to miss considerable time if he had come back. The other thing, to Jackie's point, you know, the focus is on Jerry Krause the whole series from the first episode. But I wonder if Jerry Reinsdorf steps in and says, hey, look, Jerry Krause, you and Phil are untenable. Guess what? You lose. You get to keep your job, but I'm overruling you. Phil, here's a one-year $10 million check to come back as coach. Phil then wins the power struggle. I wonder if that, at least for Phil, makes the situation tenable to survive a year. And I agree with Jackie. You bring that team back. Yeah, they're aging. They're tired. They're mentally exhausted. Who's beating them? Who's beating that team? I don't know if anyone's beating that team. And I would have liked to see it have another shot. And I think having Jerry Reinsdorf get the last word last night put a lot of the blame where it should have been and where it wasn't in the first two episodes. And that's on the guy that has the ultimate authority and responsibility for the team, and that's the owner.
And so, Jackie, I guess I would finish with this. I just brought it up with Will Perdue a couple of minutes ago. What do you think Jerry Krause's legacy with regard to all of this should be? Again, he's a man who died before he got into the Hall of Fame. He built every single piece of those championship teams, with the exception of the most important one in Michael Jordan. What should his legacy be?
Well, I thought Will was very eloquent in explaining it. You know, Jerry Krause was a brilliant executive. I don't think anybody will ever argue that. And that the thing that I always used to say to Jerry when he was alive and when I was covering him was, because he wasn't very fond of the media, Will was right about that, but I spent a lot of time trying to get to know him, was this: Jerry, you are so accomplished. Let other people talk about it. Don't keep telling us organizations win championship. Let your players say, hey, we really appreciate the job Jerry Krause did, which, by the way, Scottie Pippen did in those final two episodes.
Quick final word, Zach, from you on just all of this. As we look back on this now, young people who are younger than you are, who never saw Michael Jordan, what do you think they should come away thinking about Michael Jordan and the Bulls of the 90s?
Well, first of all, that his pizza ordering protocol was suspect on the road. Second of all, that the guy is an unvarnished. This is what it takes to win at the highest level, both as a competitor and as, I just don't think people who are around the game realize how hard it is to be a superstar in the NBA, how many demands there are on your time. I mean, you, from the minute you walk out of your hotel room to the minute you're back, you could be Donovan Mitchell or Chris Paul. It's just a constant barrage on you. And to be able to take that day after day after day and almost never miss games and win all the time, that in itself, forget the 38 points in the flu game, just living that life successfully is really, really daunting. And it's shocking that he was able to do it at that level.
Yeah, both of you, I know it was a late night last night. I really appreciate you getting up this morning for this. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and we'll see you both again soon. We have another hour coming your way here. The 98 finals ended the Bulls dynasty. Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith will join us next to explain why it all still matters so much all these years later.